Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 90, recorded on May 28th, 2018. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, we'll be talking about the general state of the Indians heading into Memorial Day 2018. The amazing combination of Francisco Lindor, Jose Ramirez, Michael Brantley, the top of the lineup, the outfield situation and how weird it's about to get, and the Indians' really easy upcoming schedule from now through the All-Star break. But first, I want to welcome on my guest, as always, Merritt Rolfing, and kind of call him out for missing the best game of the year to this point. There's a very good chance this is going to be the best game of the regular season. And Merritt Rolfing, Cleveland Indians writer and podcaster, missed it and was not watching it.
Wait, I've been demoted to guest now? I thought I was a co-host.
Guest host, co-host.
I mean, it makes sense. I missed that game. It happens. Sometimes your friends from New York come to town and you haven't seen them in a while. And you have to cook burgers all day. Look, I'm not proud of myself, but at least I was living a human being's life for one day. Is that a thing you should try to achieve? No, not if you're going to miss a game like that. That's incredible. I just assumed it was over when they obviously were losing in the ninth. So what's the point of even paying attention? But
it was kind of funny watching the game live. There were so many people that left the stands when it was
empty. Yeah.
And I couldn't blame them. I even listened to, because I gave up on the game. I started playing Rocket League and just listening to Tom Hamilton for a little bit. But even he said, when Jose Ramirez's bat was up, he's like, well, they're not going to come back today. But it was nice to see him put up this many pitches. I was like, well, they kind of did, Tom. They definitely. So even Tom Hamilton was like, he was out of it at that point.
Yeah, and I watched the at-bat on YouTube, and both Rick and Matt were like, yeah, you know, they lost this one. But, you know, they can bounce back tomorrow, I guess. So everyone was in the same boat. I just decided not to watch any of it all. So, you know.
You just took the shortcut.
I got a head start on everyone else. It's fine. It's normal, right? I don't actually watch baseball anyway. Come on.
No, you just simulate it and just look at the stats. That's all you need, right?
Yeah, I look at stats and I play a lot of MLB The Show. All right, that's the entirety of my baseball experience here.
Do they play on the field or something? What are you talking about? I think there's just
No, this is a numbers game. It's video games and numbers. That's all I need. Give me a spreadsheet or two.
All right, Merritt. We are at Memorial Day. This is. I think some people say they're still wrong, but they usually say don't look at your team standing some Memorial Day. Nothing really matters till Memorial Day. I would argue it still doesn't matter for quite a while, but we're at Memorial Day 2018, a little over 2 months into the season. We kind of have a snapshot of what the Indians are. I mean, hopefully this isn't the final picture, but they're 27-25, first in the AL Central, which of course would be like third in the AL East and fourth in the AL West. They have a plus 16 run differential, which is really good. Last year they had negative 22. We know for sure they have some major bullpen issues, which we're going to probably talk about, that they haven't really addressed other than just bringing in warm bodies to throw into the fire of opposing pitchers or opposing hitters. So there's some issues with this team, but how do you feel heading into Memorial Day knowing I guess this is almost a quarter through the year?
Well, someone, I don't remember who it was, on Twitter pointed out the one thing that can ruin a season the quickest and most viscerally is a bad bullpen. And this is the worst bullpen. But other than that, through the first six innings, you mentioned their run differential as being positive. It's like plus like 47 or something like that in the first six innings, and then negative whatever the 31, I suppose, in the following three. So that's a little depressing. I'm pulling those numbers a little bit out of my butt, but I saw it was something like that on Twitter yesterday. So it just kind of highlighted how bad the bullpen was. But other than that, I mean, I think it's been great. The offense is awaking. Today, Monday, as we record this, Edwin Encarnacion hit a very long home run and also a little bloop bases-clearing single. He's, I think in the last like 15, 20 games, he's got an OPS over 800 or so. Yonder Alonso seems to be starting to put it together too. Really, the only thing that's not going great is Jason Kipnis. And, I mean, for as amazing as Michael Brantley's been so far, which, as you mentioned, we're going to get to, it's kind of if you can only have one of them, I guess I'll have the one who at least was a borderline MVP candidate when he was at his best, as opposed to someone who was merely very good being at their best. So it's not an ideal situation to be 27-25, but the division is so bad, and I think everyone knows that it's not obviously accepted that they're going to just be in the playoffs, because anything could happen still. The Tigers are in second place for some reason, but the Twins actually have talent. And they could put something together. You know, they get to play in the same division as the Indians. They just get to play the Indians instead of getting to play the Twins, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
This sucks that the bullpen is so garbage, but everything else has been so good. I mean, Trevor Bauer might be, as I mentioned in an article the other day, there's measures that show him as the best pitcher on the Indians by slim margins that are probably inconsequential and rounding errors, but still, like, the fact that you can be compared to Corey Kluber at any point, the fact that Carlos Carrasco now may be their third best, maybe their fourth best pitcher, that's pretty cool. And again, the offense is awesome.
Yeah, and the bull, it's just so weird, like, how reliably awful the bullpen is.
That game, so reliable, though. Like, jeez.
They're consistent. Give them that. Like, it was, I think they came into the game with, what was it, like a 5-run lead on Saturday, Sunday? And then it was, like, 6 pitches, and the Astros were ahead. Like,
amazing.
It was just miserable.
I happened to be glancing just, you know, because I knew the bullpen was coming. I was checking on my phone. I didn't miss it all the way. I saw something, things happening.
Sure, Merritt, whatever.
But, you know, come on. I don't always pay attention to people. I'm addicted to my phone. It's a problem, but what are you going to do? But, no, exactly. Like you said, they just so epically. Like, how are they? I don't mean to be mean to some of these guys. They have pride, and they work hard at their craft. How did they make it to the majors? Like, I just – they're so bad. Some of them I'm surprised by how bad they've been. But some of these guys, like, I don't understand how they are here. And why they didn't get better? Like, where are the good pitchers? Why aren't any of the good pitchers on the Indians anymore? I don't know. It's for 2 months now. It's been that singular confused old man question in my head while watching this bullpen. So,
yeah. Well, I think it's a teeny tiny little part of it is this weird way that Terry Francona has been managing the bullpen. I get that he's doing it because he has no bullpen, so it's kind of a, what do you call it, chicken and egg thing, I guess. So I mean, like. He had Trevor Bauer pitch a million pitches. I think it was 127,
and then fine. That's the thing. Bauer. I mean, it's you shouldn't do that, but apparently it's a thing he can do. So whatever, do it.
But that alone, I'm not too terrible with. But the fact that he let Trevor stay in and gave up 2 base runners, and then brought in Evan Marshall. I mean, if you're going to bring him in, and if Trevor gives up 2 base runners, he's probably going to give up 2. Just let Evan Marshall come in and take a clean inning. Like, don't start him off being with 2 runners on to give up right away. Because, well, of course, he did. Like, the first pitch, and it was a home run, and it was
awesome. Yeah. Well, and they were talking about how they wanted to bring Evan Marshall in to get a ground ball. And I'm just going to check Evan Marshall's ground ball rates for his career. Is he a ground ball pitcher? I don't – boy, it doesn't even auto-populate Evan Marshall when you type his name in onto Fangraphs, because no one knows who the heck he is. Ground ball rate is something like batted ball. All right, so he has a good ground ball pitcher. I'm 55.9% for his career. Wow, that's pretty damn good. Let's pay more attention to you.
He's Evan Marshall.
yeah. It's not like we're sitting here for just going, whoo, baby, Evan Marshall's coming. No, it's still terrifying to see him coming in. And it's been very up and down also. So he's been up and down around 50%. But it evens out to something pretty. But still, again, like you said, it's Adam Marshall. Like, this is – it's not Joe Smith or, you know, your Brian Shaw of the world. Or even, again, Dan Otero, who is a much better ground ball pitcher when he actually throws sinkers as opposed to – he's been throwing a lot of fastballs this year. I think I mentioned this on a week or two ago. But just way more four seams, which is – unless you're, I don't know, Max Scherzer or something, it's a bad idea to throw that many four seam fastballs because that's what hitters like to hit now. And if you can't throw 99 miles an hour, you're going to get crushed. That's why Josh Tomlin is slowly finding his way. I don't even know where he ends up, too. That's a conversation for another day.
Yeah, he's not a bullpen pitcher. I mean, you don't want a guy in your bullpen who instantly gives up home runs every time. I've never understood that. Oh, just put him in the bullpen. It's either he's going to be a starter in the majors, or he's not going to be a starter anywhere.
I started as soon as I saw the news that he was going to get moved to the bullpen because it happened on like a Wednesday or something, and I needed to write an article that was going to go up on Saturday, I started kind of thinking about, like, well, what if this is a reverse thing? You know, I tried to convince myself that it was going to be a good idea. And then that afternoon, he came in and gave up a home run on like the second pitch. I was like, all right, never mind. This does not work out at all. So, yeah. I don't know what's going on there, but it's been – I've kind of lost my train of thought here.
Not good is the general bull. I mean, overall, they're a pretty good team. The offense is great. It shouldn't have to put up 10 runs every game to win, but they are, so.
I think that is, again, a very glossed over – thing with this whole season so far. The offense has been incredible and only getting better. Like, you mentioned we want to talk about the top three right now, but I mean, Yan Gomes is hitting. He's not hitting amazingly well, but he's driving the ball like he did a couple years ago. He'll figure it out eventually, I think, in terms of luck. But he's hitting well. DeLonzo and Edwin's going to hit. Who else is even on this
team? Yeah, Alonzo's streaky, but when he's starting to hit, he's finally getting it. And Edwin is always slow to start, so I think he's going to come around eventually. And I mean, those top three that we'll talk about, they're incredible. They're leading this. They're leading like everybody, I think.
And then, Melky Cabrera's been a nice little addition too. So I think that's a pickup that was whatever the opposite of sexy is. I guess ugly.
Melky.
I don't know.
It was Melky.
Melky. Yeah, it was like, yeah, all right, I guess so. But he's been at the very least comporting himself pretty well in right field. So that's been a very nice little addition. Yeah. You know, Dan Otero's actually throwing more sinkers than ever. Maybe sinkers are just a bad idea now. I don't know.
Well, there you go. I don't know. And you asked, so I mean, I guess my question about the bullpen is just how long can they sit and just wait for things to even themselves out? They have nobody. Andrew Miller looks like he's broken, and even if he isn't going to be on the DL for a while, they're going to keep burning Cody Allen. All these other guys aren't producing the way they are. Can they just sit forever and not do anything about it until the trade deadline? I mean, well, I guess they have a really weak schedule coming up, so maybe they can, but
yeah,
that's brutal.
I mean, I was talking about this with – I was on a radio show this past Friday because I'm famous. And wow, Toledo famous. Sure, but you know, but that's a very. I mean, I've been trying to figure it out for what ever since Andrew Miller turned out to be not good this year, right? And ever since they didn't have Brian Shaw, you knew they were going to make a move sometime this year, and who it's going to be. And I know, I think Mike Petriello mentioned on Twitter trading for both Manny Machado and Zach Britton. I think they could trade for just Zach Britton. He's not even healthy yet, so he wouldn't cost too much, maybe, in terms of prospects. And that's an idea. If he's anything resembling what he was when he was healthy, he's suddenly the best reliever in the bullpen, even if Andrew Miller returns to form. But I think the common name these days is Brad Hand, right? I think we're all saying it to ourselves, yeah. or to people who are actually talking about fixing the bullpen, because he's a cost controlled pitcher on a bad team. It's not going anywhere. It needs more prospects. So maybe that, but I don't know. They need to do something eventually. Like you said, though, they got a very easy schedule coming up. They can afford to coast through this stuff because I think they're going to put a decent amount of space between them and the rest of the AL Central, especially if the Twins continue to just kind of spin their wheels. Even if the Twins kind of go 1-1 the rest of like for a month or so, I think the Indians will be able to put a nice like 8 or 10 game cushion between them and the Twins. And that's the only real risk. The Tigers are going to do another batch of sell-off probably if they can find any more, you know, anything else to sell there.
And I've never got why people are so low on the Twins to begin with. I mean, they were a playoff team last year, and now they added a couple. They were small pieces, but they did add things to themselves, and they're still a pretty good team. So I'm still legitimately scared about the Twins coming out of nowhere and winning the division. But the Indian schedule is just so weak coming up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're going to be able to make a ton of hay here. And, like, you know, I mean, injuries to the Twins do suck. But like you said, they added Morrison. He's not going to hit 200 for the rest of the year. They added a bunch of different guys. I mean, Cashman getting hurt kind of sucks. Miguel Sano is – I don't know what's up with Miguel Sano. Obviously, I haven't been paying that much attention to the Twins. But, again, also, I'm sure he won't hit 200 the rest of the year. Is he dead? What happened to him?
He's probably might be dead. I'm going to guess injured, but –
No, because his name is bolded on Baseball Reference, so maybe he's just
dead.
Maybe he's just dead. It turns out this is just how you look. That's well.
He was reinstated 4 days ago.
Oh, okay.
So hamstring issues. Yeah,
that's right. Okay, so I mean, again, he'll hit.
Oh yeah,
Byron Buxton, maybe not, but they're going to be good. They're going to be an over 500 team probably the rest of the year. They'll probably still win like 85 games, and at this point. Do we think the Indians are going to win 95 games?
Well,
I mean,
unless they can find a way to win 91 over like the next month, over like 30 games, can they win 90 of them somehow?
Well, and I mean, the thing is too, we talk about the soft schedule, and we've experienced long winning streaks the last couple of years, and part of the reason for that is they've been playing some pretty bad teams. It really helps. Yes, like if you look at like whether the 22-game win streak, the 14-game win streak, or even the little 9-game win streak in early 2017. Yes, there were some good teams, but there were a lot of bad teams in there too. So this whole run through the beginning of June, I think, is where we might see that little blip of the old Indians magic we kind of got used to the last couple of years. Not having the best bullpen in baseball kind of make it a little more difficult, but... We'll see.
But it's going to be a blistering offense, kind of.
I know.
Indians magic coming up.
And that's cool. I mean, if they score 8 runs a game, that's a lot of fun, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, why not? You know?
If you ignore the crisis of the fact that they're probably not going to do that in the playoffs and just enjoy it in the regular season, sure, that's real fun.
Well, yeah, They might this time, you know. I mean, no one is great all the time in the playoffs all the time. Alex Rodriguez was terrible in the playoffs all the time. Then one time he was good, they won a World Series. So maybe they'll all be good at the same time this year. Maybe Jose Ramirez's insane hot streak will fall in October rather than August this year. And, yeah.
I mean, he's already in an insane hot streak. I mean, we talk about it now. It's Lindor, Ramirez, and Brantley at the top of the lineup is the Indians offense. Although the Sunday game was, again, it was weird because a lot of the lower and the order guys started hitting. But those three in the last, especially May, I mean, Brantley's on a 17-game hitting streak. Mm-hmm. Jose Ramirez is like the same player as Brantley in that they never missed a ball. And Jose Ramirez hits for more power now. And Francisco Lindor adds a bunch of power from the leadoff spot. And, I mean, those three are incredible. Are they the best 1-2-3 in baseball, I think? I said that, and I'm trying to think of a way out of it. I don't think there is. They are, right? I mean, you got Mike Trout, who's better on its own.
In a very narrow sense of batting 1, 2, and 3, yeah, probably.
Well, no, I mean just the best top third of any lineup. We call it that.
No, I agree with you, but I just only because Brett Gardner bats first so often for the Yankees.
Oh, yes, sir.
I would still, I don't know. I mean, I still might think they are a little bit better. And then, of course, you have the Reds. I don't mean to poo-poo what you're saying. I mean, the Red Sox do have Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez. And then, I don't know who bats like second or third or whatever for them. I'm trying to think who, maybe Benintendi. I might take that group over there just because, I mean, Martinez has been on fire. And Mookie Betts is hitting like his name's Mike Trout. So, but the fact we get to have that conversation, I think, is, I'm not good at ranking people anyway. Whenever I have a top five, it ends up being 10 people. So, I would say they're one, but yeah, that's the thing. They're the reassuming of greatness that Michael Brantley has done this whole season so far has been, I think, a little bit of a glossed over story just because so many things have been going bad with the bullpen and how great other players have been. But he's been really, really good. And he's hitting for decent power, too, is the thing. I think his slugging percentage right now is higher than it's ever been at 559. Just a smidge low, actually, below. No, I'm sorry, this is OPS when he was terrible. Jesus Christ. This would be his best power output season if you were to extrapolate out to an entire. I mean, if you say he's going to bat, 600 times, and you're saying he's going to hit 25 home runs, and that's pretty good, Matt. That's pretty darn good.
Sources tell me that's pretty good. That's pretty all right.
it's normal now for someone to do that. That's basically he's turning into 2016 Jose Ramirez, which having two of those alone would be nice. Having a 2018 Ramirez and a 2016 Ramirez and a 2018 Lindor, whew. And that's a lot of car sounding things that we just talked about, but you know.
And I mean, for the most part, 2016 Ramirez is 20. Oh god, I'm getting my dates mixed up. Is like 2015 Brantley with the contact. Yes. I mean, Brantley was better at not missing than Jose Ramirez ever was, which is Jose Ramirez has more power. But it's just weird that they're doing it in such a different way. Like you said, it's so common to have an OPS through the roof and hitting all these home runs, but. Jose and Brantley, especially, even Lindor is all right at contact, but those two are just so hard to get out. You can't just blow anything by them because they'll swing at everything. I mean, right. We saw the 17 pitch at bat in itself, which Jose Ramirez did, and then that alone pretty much sparked that rally. It knocked the closer out. It got through the Astros bullpen and kind of rattled them. But I mean, it's so different than. Like, we had the long, what was it, like 100 years ago almost at this point, is Murderer's Row because of how many home runs they hit and how incredible they were on offense. This is almost like, I mean, they aren't as good overall, but they're doing something so different compared to everyone else that it's almost like a new version of the Murderer's Row, like the Indians version of it, because they're so good at making contact and they're going to hit a bunch of power and Jose Ramirez is going to just run you over every game.
And I do, yeah, that makes it exciting too because, you know, one of the things I like the least about baseball these days is the amount of strikeouts. You understand the math, but it doesn't make it any more fun. And I mean, just people who are basically the offensive, you know, centerpieces of a team don't usually have a walk rate in in the single digits. They might have a 9.9, but usually it's 10 plus, you know. And right now Brantley's sitting at 5.5, which would be a career low for him. I assume he'll start walking more soon. But same thing with Ramirez. Well, how much is he walking at now? I'll take a look while you vamp. But seriously, no. This is they're more fun to watch than say a I don't know. I think than what the Yankees are doing just because they're all just swinging and missing, hitting bombs all the time. Oh, yeah. So it makes it a bit more exciting. I wonder if you would like. Do you think we would ever see like an Aaron Judge 17 pitch at bat? Probably. I'm not going to sit here and say he's bad. The guy was second MVP voting and hit. a billion home runs last year. So I'm sure it could happen. He's a Major League Baseball player, but it's just the amount of contact these guys can make is simply absurd. And
I don't think he'd do it intentionally. I mean, if he had that many foul balls, he'd just be trying to crank everything out, and so many of them just miss, and it'd be kind of dumb luck, I think. I don't think he can make that much contact in that bat like Jose can.
Okay, Jose Ramirez's walk rate is 13.3%. So that's more normal to what we expect these days. But Brantley in particular is really the throwback player. You know, I mean, he's just a high contact, serve the ball over the field. That single he had to drive in, I guess it was the tying run yesterday in the ninth inning, was exactly the type of Michael Brantley, you know, kind of little, just bloop it over the third baseman, just, you know, take your base and move on with your day that you expect from someone in 1954. And not in 2017. It's usually more the double to the wall like Jose had in his 17 pitch at bat.
Yeah, and I'm going to get kind of old man yells at Cloudsy here, but you mentioned that the math is understandable, but it's kind of boring to watch. There's a lot of stuff in baseball right now that feels that way for me. Like the strikeouts especially, even just hitting home runs and just drawing walks. Like the three true outcome player thing is so boring. I like balls being put in play and seeing defense and those pitches Michael Brantley boops and –
I wrote about Jose Altuve for Beyond the Box Score. By the way, Aaron Judge's contact rate this year is 65.8%, fully 25% lower than Michael Brantley's is, I assume, is not 90%. I didn't even look, but I just assume it's that high. But, you know, somewhere around there, which is just crazy. I mean, the amount of power he's able to develop, this whole swing hard in case you hit it thing is – I love it. It's how I'd probably played softball, but – maybe that's what it is, man. It's the softballification of baseball.
See, I don't love it. I don't like watching it. I get that. I'm never going to say that they shouldn't be doing it because it's what leads to winning. But I so want like another swing back revolution. Like the pendulum to swing back the other way where making contact is good. And especially with like pitchers, I want starting pitchers to go long. Like the opener thing, I get it. It probably makes sense. It's probably better to win. But I don't want to see just a bunch of nameless relievers come in and do switches every inning. I just want like one starting pitcher to dominate for so many innings. That's way more fun to me than getting matchup. It's also why I hate the NL rules.
They need to expand the size of the pitcher area in the scorecard. Otherwise, I'm not going to keep score anymore. I don't have time for this to be drawing new boxes and things like that. It makes it a mess. But, you know, I was just thinking about that. As you said, that because as velocities go higher and higher, contact is going to go lower and lower. And even though the idea of the harder you throw, the further the ball goes is false, the ball will just travel very far no matter what. How hard you hit it is how it matters. I don't wonder if there might be a bit of a swing back like that, only because if no one can connect for big time power, right? And if people keep on shifting more and more to take away all the pull zones, maybe we will see a swing back towards some sort of contact centric hitter being at least somewhat valuable. You know, getting away from everyone wanting to get yet another three true outcome player just because it just makes too many outs at this point. Like they figured out how to mitigate that by who knows what. Maybe as curveballs, you know, breaking balls become more, right? Like as more and more breaking balls become more and more in vogue, and guys just can't. It simply becomes impossible to square balls up and drive over the fence at the same rate as we've seen, which we've already seen this year too. Like the power is down at least a little bit this year as opposed to last year. I don't know if they change the ball back again or what, but I wonder if that may lead to, I don't know. I wonder if baseball even has the ability to change that quickly though. You know, like I know with like basketball, it can change quickly because guys can just say, stop shooting less threes, shoot more threes. Like they did that with like DeMar DeRozan up in Toronto this year. He had a career year in part because he shot more threes than ever after after December or some such thing.
I think we're learning to change it faster because it used to be, I mean, there wasn't before. You knew just to swing up, it would be you'd have to tell them to hit more home runs, but there's no real like definitive way to do that. But now that they have it, they can say specifically swing up, which is like the equivalent of saying shoot more three pointers.
True.
So I think we're getting to a point where we can shift faster, and eventually it's going to shift back the other way. I think shifting. Well, speaking of shifting, like shifting defense is like learning to hit the other way, and they're gonna have to start teaching that again, like the minor leagues to beat shifts if they're ever going to bother with it is going to be the thing that swings it back, I think. That and curveballs.
Well, and that's why I wonder if it won't take a longer time because shooting a basketball is shooting a basketball. Yes, you shoot a little bit further when it's a three-pointer than if it's a 16-footer, but the mechanics are basically the same when you're an athlete at the top of your game, the top of your physique. When it comes to baseball, the swing is such a learned muscle. I would think it seems like it's such a learned muscle memory thing. It would be, it's such a big deal to change your swing. You know, that's why people write about it. That's why, like, you do the same thing all the time. That's why it's weird even when a pitcher changes their delivery. When Rich Hill does what he does, or when Tyler Olson changes his arm angle, it's strange and bizarre and often has less than positive outcomes. You know, like it will have a big learning curve. Like, that's why Yonder Alonso makes way less contact now than he used to, in part because, again, I'm kind of spitballing here a little bit, but it makes sense to me. He's swinging in a completely different way, and maybe there was a learning curve, and that relearning muscle memory like that is more difficult than I think we think. So that's why I wonder if it would take, like, again, and these guys are super great at what they do. I don't know how long it took Jose Bautista to go from being what he was to what he became. You know, like apparently there was one little tweak and all of a sudden he was hitting, like, you look at his stats from the year before he hit 54 home runs, like from September 1st on, he hit like 14 home runs or something like that. And it was all because of this one little tweak. Same thing with like Josh Donaldson. He adjusted something, but I don't know. Again, I don't know how much work it really is because I play wiffle ball. You know, I don't actually play baseball. I play a real sport here.
And so, I think it's kind of, I don't know. I mean, the whole, I guess Yonder Alonso is a good example of someone who isn't adjusting well to parts of it. But I mean, everybody's swinging up now and a lot of people are doing really well with it. And Alonso's just really streaky at it. And is it, I know nothing about basketball, but is there really no mechanical difference between shooting like at the foul line and then shooting a deep three pointer?
Well, I mean, shooting a foul shot, you're not jumping.
Not a foul shot, but like.
But like just shooting like a 14. Yeah. I mean, in my experience of shooting many basketballs, no, it seems like the same. There's a little more leg to it, I guess. But like, that's really it because you're just trying to get elevation with your legs, right?
Yeah,
you're just trying to shoot a little further. I mean, yeah, it's probably a little. It's again the space is a little bit smaller, but the thing about basketball that's difficult with shooting is actually changing your jump shot. That's why, like, Markel Fultz was just not in basketball all year this year, despite being number one overall pick, was because he changed his shot so much. Or I don't know. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist continues to be bad at one side of the ball because he just can't shoot and he's never learned how to shoot. Again, it's a muscle memory thing. So that's why I wonder if the muscle memory thing as opposed to just shooting is easier. I don't know.
Or maybe this is just new baseball and we're already old, Barrett. We're the what's the equivalent? We just hate, I don't know, the DH. We're like those people who hated it when it came. This is, home runs are fun. Kids love them.
It moves so quickly, Matt. It's insane. Right,
so enough of these good parts of the Indians. We don't want to talk about that. We got an outfield to talk about here, Merritt. Right now, it's not great. I guess Michael Brantley's there. That's pretty great.
Who's in the outfield now?
I don't know. Melky Cabrera and some dudes. No, it's Greg Allen. He hit a home run. You know that game you missed yesterday? That big one?
I do. He hit the walk-off on that. All right.
That was Gregory Allen hit the walk-off on that one. He also had a really – what did he do? Oh, he like screwed up in the ninth inning, but it wasn't that bad. I just remember tweeting out Gregory, and I can't remember what for, but he didn't do something great. So anyway, Greg Allen's there. He's in the outfield. So Chisenhall, Guyer, and Zimmer all rehabbing at the same time in Akron. There's a decent chance they're all going to come back maybe like the exact same time or really close. So what is your guess for what the outfield's going to look like when they come back? I guess Naquin, is he rehabbing too or no?
Yes, 10-day deals. Although he was in the dugout today, so I don't know. I think it's just a hamstring thing. Maybe they're just keeping him around because I saw him in the dugout today or yesterday or something.
Oh, just a hamstring. Get out there and run. Come on, Tyler.
Yeah, come on. It's good for you. Stretch it out.
Ask Andrew Miller how that goes.
That's a good question because, I mean, if you look at Melky Cabrera's numbers this year, they're not great, but he seems like he could be a useful player, you know?
Isn't it this whole outfield? They're not great, but they seem like they could be useful. That's outfielder.
Greg Allen is just a slightly worse version of Brad Zimmer at this point, right?
Yeah.
Brad Zimmer. Can we say Charlie. Brad Zimmer? Are we going to say Bradley?
His name
forever?
Is
Bradley. It's so
you
nerdy.
Can't call a man with that chin Brad. That is a Bradley.
Bradley,
chin.
What are you doing? No. So obviously, and Brantley's there, and yeah. They're not going to get rid of Rozai Davis for whatever reason. But, I mean, honestly, he's a good guy to have around if only for pitch running and defensive replacement purposes.
And when you need to steal third when you're on second base for some weird reason, he can do that really well.
He's so good at it. It's amazing. but, if they keep Cabrera, I almost feel like the odd man out might be Brandon Guyer. just because he's been really bad this year, and he was bad last year, and I think he's getting – what is wrong with him now? Is it still a wrist thing? Because that was his problem last year.
If I was a good host, I would know that.
Placed on DL with neck strain. That's right. Okay. So he's got a neck problem now. But I mean, it's a damn good question. What do you do with Monkey Cabrera? You can't send him back down without having passed waivers, and someone else will try and pick him up probably. So if we're imagining who's going to be in the outfield, it's going to be sick, probably five people, right?
Yeah,
Brantley.
Five's fair.
Assuming total health, I'm thinking Brantley, Zimmer, Davis, and that gives me two more for right field.
Chisenhall's not going anywhere. You got to include Chisenhall.
Chisenhall's not going anywhere. Yes. So we have one more person.
And for you, that's Melky, right? So guy. Well, then you got Naquin eventually. Who's going to have?
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, maybe it's Naquin though, because I mean, I don't know how many options he has left, but I
think we both agree Allen's just going to be optioned, right?
Who's that?
Greg Allen.
Oh, Allen. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. He'll that's be an easy one. Yeah. No, yeah, easy yeah. Oh, yes. Greg Allen is
gone. I mean, he's going to be. He has options.
It's kind of for now. He's not going to be. Right. Exactly. His his problem is he has options, so he'll be sent back down because he is the one with the most able to move around. Mm-hmm. But I don't know.
See,
no,
maybe I'm surprised you're so stuck on Melky Cabrera sticking around. See, he was my first one that's just gone. I don't think they care what happens to him. But you think he's. Well,
I don't know. I can't decide. Because, like, I mean, just I guess you probably if you're assuming total health once again, then I guess you just go with the amalgamation in right field that is Chisenhall and Guyer. And if Chisenhall actually does start hitting lefties again like he did, what was it, last year? I think he was actually pretty good against lefties. Then maybe you're fine.
I mean,
I don't know. Again, if his leg continues to be terrible, then we'll have to see. But. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm being silly and keeping him around is actually a bad idea. Him being Melky Cabrera, but
I don't know about bad. But I think as long as you have Lonnie Chisenhall around, you have Brandon Guyer around, right?
Right. I guess that's what. Yeah. When I say bad, I guess I just mean it's not going to happen. It's a silly idea to even play with because he's just a guy to fill a role until someone gets healthy. So that's probably going to be the guys that we saw at the beginning of the year: Brantley, Davis, Zimmer, Chisenhall and Guyer, which isn't exciting, but it's good. They're talented. They're all good players in their own roles, I guess, when they actually hit and stuff.
This is nothing related to anything, but Melky Cabrera kind of reminds me of like Marlon Byrd from 2016. I mean, he's not going to get busted for steroids, but he was just kind of here for a little bit and then gone. Again, no. He won't get busted again for steroids. Let me rephrase that.
I forgot about Marlon Byrd, man. Right?
Every time I look at Melky, I just think Marlon Byrd. I don't know why.
That 2016 Indians team was weird. Didn't
Juan Uribe?
Juan Uribe was on the team for a while. I mean, Mike Napoli was good for like two-thirds of a season and just fell into a crater. Like, just looking back at that roster, they made the World Series, man. Abraham Amonte got 194. I wrote a lot of articles about Abraham Amonte.
You did.
Oh, the memories. Good time. Michael Martinez was still around. And we all keep forgetting that he was 33 years old.
He's the 25th man on the roster. He won't come up in like an important situation there. Let's move on. Anyway,
move
the upcoming on. Schedule for the Cleveland Indians. It's really bad. Everything's really bad today. I don't know why.
Great for the Indians. Let's be clear here.
But let's run this down and just any of these teams worry you whatsoever. It's White Sox, Twins, Brewers. Yeah, maybe. Tigers, White Sox again, Twins again, White Sox again, Tigers again. Cardinals, maybe, yeah. A's, yeah. Royals, A's, Reds, and then the Yankees. That's all heading into the All-Star break. So they don't really have, like, a really, really legitimate tough team, I guess, until the Yankees. The Brewers and Cardinals are kind of pretty good at times. But it's really...
Who's in first place in that division?
Well, I mean, they're the Brewers. I think the Brewers are the best team in the NL. But you know what? They're the Brewers, Merritt. They have Jesus Aguilar.
Who's hitting really well, Matt. Let's just... I agree with the principle, but... The real is he's kind of hitting, but no, I know
they're one of the teams that could fall off. I think I don't think the Yankees.
It's a four-game set against the Twins, which is one. I don't know. They'll probably split that one for stupid reasons. But other than that, like if they don't win, let's see. I figure they'll sweep the White Sox. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Wow, I'm really just counting on a whole lot of sweeps here, aren't I?
I mean, how can you not? It's the White Sox, Tigers, and Royals.
I mean, if they just win, I figure they'll win 68% of their games or 70% of their games in this run, which is insane to say because no one wins 70% of their games at any run. But again, like I was saying before, this is where the winning streaks come from. And the Cardinals, again, are a pretty good team. But that's two teams with winning records that they're going to play. And then the Twins, who should, they've been terrible, but they'll probably be better. No, this is a total mess. And like I said before, they better make some hay here because it's going to, no matter what else happens after the All-Star break, it's going to be harder than this because it's not going to be easier than this. It can't be easier than
this. That's a good way to put it, yeah.
It can't pot. Are the A's bad? They are bad, huh? Jeez.
They're the A's. They're bad.
Well, you can't just say these things. They have a lot of championships over the years. And it was like 94 games a couple years ago. Well, whatever.
They're not good this year, though.
No, they're not.
No, but
they have a winning record, actually. They have a better record than the Indians. Well, so you know what? Whoa.
But they have Jesus Aguilar.
No, that's the A's. The A's have a better record
than the Indians. No, I'm kidding. They have them, too. Everybody has
Jesus Aguilar. Don't worry. Yeah, they're sharing him. It's a dual thing.
So I guess part of the bad schedule and hopefully winning a lot of games is what's going to, I hope, vindicate me from my don't worry about pitch count thing early on. Because if they can win, if you like 68% of their games between now and the All-Star break, the division is probably pretty good at that point. And if they get if they get some kind of great reliever at the deadline, that's the time they can either just not worry about losing a game or two in September and or August mm-hmm. and then rely on their bullpen to win some others and give their starters some breaks heading into the postseason. Well, otherwise, they'll just keep burning out their starters and I'll look dumb and Terry will look dumb. Everybody look dumb.
Well, I mean, they're going to have to. They still need to get a new reliever. I don't think we can gloss over that. But that said, this is the reason why we thought this division was so winnable to start the season because it's just ugly. This is an ugly, dumb division with nothing good. And the only dangerous thing in it is just very bad.
I mean, the Twins are legit dangerous. They don't have Jesus Aguilar. They're dangerous.
That's true. They don't. They have the player I want the Indians to sign, Logan Morrison. I don't know what to mean, Logan Morrison over the years, but I've always been like writing articles with titles like "No Lomo," no, more Lomo. It was terrible. It was a terrible title, and I hate. I don't remember where I wrote that for, but
that was definitely that would have been changed. That was probably beyond the box score.
Well, that was somewhere else. Definitely good.
And yeah, I feel like this is again unrelated, but like the Logan Morrison thing, and I guess almost every single reliever that isn't doing good, they all say, "See, the Indians were right not to sign him because they're not doing good." But I mean, you don't know that. There's so much different that can happen if they're pitching on this staff. Like Carl Willis might have affected Brian Shaw differently, and Brian Shaw might have faced some pitchers that he's better against. He wouldn't have played in Colorado. I mean, there's so many different. Like people look at a signing somewhere else and how they did and just completely make it like a one-to-one to sign somewhere else. It's just not how it works. Like even with Logan Morrison is another case where I still think that would have been a decent signing if they didn't get Yonder Alonso. Yeah. And I think they started with Logan Morrison trying to get him, but he didn't want to come
right,
here.
Right, they did.
Yeah, so I don't think that would have been terrible, but it's just kind of funny seeing all these free agents be so bad elsewhere and the Indians get Yonder Alonso, who's kind of good occasionally, so it worked out.
I didn't realize how bad Joe Smith's season was going. Jeez. Oh,
yeah. It's like every reliever. I think Brandon Morrow is the only really good. Was he a free agent last year? I think so, right? And he's been good this season.
Well, I mean, if you look at the Astros relieving core, they have a couple guys here that they signed. For instance, Hector Rondon, which the Indians could really be using right now. He'd be their second, they're probably their best reliever right now. But they're doing well. But you know, they just use a lot of mind power.
Yeah, and Brandon Morrow, 2-year, $21 million deal. He has a 1.04 ERA right now. So the Cubs made out well on that.
Right.
But I mean, everyone else is not that good.
Oh, and like you said, like how much of that is staff and support, you know, the things around you, as like I jokingly just said a thing about the Astros, but there's a real thing about having some, you know, the being in the right place at the right time. Like who knows if Joe Smith would be bad still if he was if he went to the Indians instead of the Astros, which is confusing because everyone else who goes there does well. For whatever reason. But like you said, Brandon Morrow, like, would he succeed in Colorado? The answer is no. No one succeeds in Colorado as a pitcher. But would Brian Shaw be still good? I don't know. I mean, he was – how many times did we write our articles about him last year, even the year before, just about how he was on the downswing and it doesn't make sense to re-sign him. It just sucks that everything is – we just got so, you know – just spoiled with literally having such an amazing bullpen over the years, losing the faces that did it and not having anything to replace it over. But, you know, this year has really been terrible.
Yeah.
They have to. They're going to trade for someone because they have to. Because you can't just waste this. And if you do that, then you're going to really burn a whole lot of goodwill that you've built over the last 4 years or whatever. Yeah, and that's a stupid thing to do over a couple million dollars.
Yeah, if you can. I mean, I tweeted about it kind of angrily when the Indians, right before they came on a big comeback in the ninth inning. But it's just kind of funny how like a decade of all their great drafts and trades and contracts go out the window because they didn't sign a reliever in the offseason. Like that one decision could torch all of this if this is like their last.
It's utterly insane to think that. And I just, and like I wrote a couple weeks ago, why can't they develop a reliever? Who the hell knows? It's so confusing.
Yeah.
They should just turn Corey Kluber into a reliever. I think that's probably, whoa.
Yeah, is it maybe because they always draft like these Shane Beavers, who's going to make his debut on Thursday. They always go for these guys who are working the strike zone, and they don't strike a lot of people out, and they don't walk a lot of people as their big thing.
They don't throw any one great thing, too. You know? Right. That's what I wrote about a couple weeks ago. Like Mike Clevenger doesn't have any one killer pitch. Corey Kluber does now, but he didn't when he became a starter. He was just he had a bunch of pretty good offerings, and like you said, didn't walk people. It was the very base of what makes a good pitcher is what they are, and then they build on that as opposed to going really high ceiling. I can't think of the last time they got a really. I guess Tristan McKenzie was a high scorer, and then they drafted him, but he's going to be a starter because he's just too good, and you still want starting pitching over reliever pitching. But
oh yeah, for sure.
We'll see about this Shane Bieber, though. Maybe he's a reliever of the future. Why not?
That seems like – I mean, I guess he's like the opposite of Josh Tomlin because he doesn't walk anybody. And well, Tomlin doesn't walk anybody, but I don't know. He just seems like he'd be such a good starter because he doesn't – he's like a good Josh Tomlin because he doesn't walk people. He also doesn't give up a million home runs. So
I feel like that'd be a waste. But. Is what you're telling me? So a good pitcher is what you're telling me? Because, man.
Yeah, maybe. Are you calling Josh Tomlin not a good pitcher?
Well, is that what you're doing? Is that what you're doing right now, man? Makes it a bit of an adventure, Matt. It just makes the game a little bit exciting, and he gives away a lot of free baseballs, is all I'm saying to you.
See, right? He cares about making our games exciting, Matt.
That's
well, we're over here complaining about home runs. Oh, he's giving us more of them, so that's bad.
You know, I wrote a long time ago about how the most, the greatest thing, the most fan-friendly thing for the working man in all of baseball is the home run, because it's giving back to the man in the cheapest seats, the bleachers. As opposed to all those rich people deep. Getting all those foul balls. Tells you something about what it is to be rich. It's foul, Matt.
Oh, that is deep, Merritt. You need to like get that tattooed somewhere.
Yeah, no, rich people are foul. What's that mean? I'm not sure. I thought it up 10 years ago. It's a confusing tattoo now. I got it on my neck. Oh, well.
All right, Merritt. Let's finish this up with some nice Twitter questions that we got here today.
All right.
I definitely sent these to you ahead of time. I sent these to you clearly hours ago. So if you don't know any of these answers right away, this is on you.
I've been reviewing them assiduously. Yes.
I definitely did not have any time to do this earlier and just really quickly put them in my document today and didn't send them to you.
It's completely fine. You probably weren't watching the intro to the Stanley Cup Finals because the Vegas Golden Knights are the best team in all of sports.
You bandwagon. So let's see. What am I going to start with? Start with a weird one. So, at Kevin Gammon asks, when does LeBron join the Indians' bullpen, since it seems like he's the only one who can carry them to victory at this point? Do you put LeBron in the bullpen if you put him in baseball? I guess if...
Well, first, no, he's playing center field. Second of all, I'd prefer Kevin Love after watching those 94-foot passes that he's been doing from from basket to basket to LeBron. That's the kind of arm I want.
There you go.
All right? That or... Now, Kyle Korver would be more of like a Josh Tomlin type because he doesn't really do a lot of anything amazing, but he's super accurate. So, yeah, that's more of that. But no, I'd prefer Kevin Love and
yeah, LeBron James on wingspan in center field would be ridiculous.
Actually, you know, you mentioned wingspan. His release point would be like 50 feet from the plate.
Yeah.
It would appear to be like 98 miles an hour, even if it's only going like 85. So maybe that is a good idea. Maybe could he like Carter caps it where he's like jumping off the mound? In which case, he's throwing it from 35 feet away.
Is that a thing? Is there a lot of relievers with big wingspans? Is that did I just discover the market inefficiency? I think I did.
No, that's one of the reasons that Chris, what's his last name? The tall, skinny dude who was on the Royals for a while. He has the name of another player.
He does have a name, yeah.
Not Chris Davis, though. Chris Davis is two people also. No, it's
Chris give me a Davis mantis. Is two people.
Well, there's Chris Davis with a K about. And Chris Davis with a C. What's
he
his
was
name?
A super tall reliever.
Right, exactly. Chris Young. Yeah, exactly. Because there's also the outfit of Chris Young. But
yeah.
One of the things that makes him so good is he's incredibly long and lanky. And so even if he's only thrown 88, it coming at you at like 51 feet or something like that. Not really. That'd be a 9 foot change in release point, but basically that's what it is. So it just, it, you perceive it to be more. Yeah. And Baseball Savant does have a perceived velocity on there, which is a thing. And it is definitely about how the sight and whatnot works. So no, that's one of the reasons after that I read an interview with Dayton Moore. That's why they signed him, was because he was so good because of that reason.
Yeah.
Well, actually their reasoning was, well, he was so good against us, we might as well sign him because they're so focused on the, anyway. I mean, I guess LeBron James could be a good reliever. I don't know. I just think he's kind of a one pitch guy.
Yeah.
I just don't know if he's got these big hands though. Got a lot of spin on the ball.
Oh yeah.
Hmm.
So at B Lou 1131, he asked, what do you think of firing Carl Willis or Scott Hutchison at this point? Outside of the big four, the pitching has been a mess this year. This is the thing we haven't really talked about, is a lot of things coming up. Do you fire either pitching coach at this point, or do you still think it's too early?
I don't know. What's the point? What's the point at this point? Like the pitching coach has already done his damage, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, if you're going to fire anybody, I guess you do Carl Willis, right? Because everybody likes Scott Hutchison, and Willis just came on and things are bad, so.
I mean, because you can't fire both of them. You'd fire one of them, and then you keep the guy who's been with the team for the longer time and have him take over, and then he says, throw more breaking balls, and then the relievers do, and then they become good again. Or not. I don't know. I guess so. We've all had the thought, I'm sure, while watching games, like, this is all Carl Willis's fault, but it's more so with hitting coaches, but also it's hard to really blame the pitching coach too much. These guys are still pro athletes. Like, hitting coaches in particular, you can't really blame because do you praise them when the guys are hitting well? No. But we did all praise Mickey Callaway when the pitchers pitched well, so maybe. It's a non-zero thing I could see happening, but that probably won't happen because it's overly reactionary, and they'd have to be really, really bad through August for that to actually happen. And then at that point, too, what's the point? So.
Right. At Chi Tribe AP, he wants to know, not that these two deals are related, but would you rather somehow acquire a season-saving reliever right now and have Lindor sign a 3-year contract extension, or be stuck with this DIY bullpen and Lindor sign a lifetime contract extension? So I guess that's kind it's an either-or thing. To simplify it, would you rather have a reliever this year and Lindor a shorter amount of time, or just not get a reliever and Lindor signs basically forever? I guess the easy, like the surface answer, just get Lindor forever, obviously. But if you don't have a reliever now, this is like your 1 year. Maybe it's worth it to have him only a couple years and get a dominant reliever and win the World Series this year. But I don't know.
Well, I do refute a little bit that this is their 1 year. The pitching staff is still the key point of the pitching staff, I think, is obviously Kluber and Carrasco being there along with Bauer. And Bauer's there through 21 or something like that at least. He's probably going to go all the way through arbitration and he won't sign a long-term contract because, you know, more power to him, I guess. But same thing with the other guy. The only thing that really leads after this year, the other guy being Corey Kluber. Sorry about that.
Corey, other guy, Kluber.
Corey, other guy. Yeah, but the only thing that really leaves after this year, right, is Brantley and Kipnis, I believe. No, Kipnis is signed for a while. It's Brantley who leaves at the end of the year. And that sucks, but the Indians have been good at developing hitters out of nowhere, too. I mean, Jose Ramirez, Brantley himself, guys who just emerged as if from whole cloth. He was the other guy to throw in the Laporta deal anyway, so I think that they could probably figure out a way to replace the offensive output after this year and the fact that they still have their two best hitters, and then they would have Lindor forever, which is also cool. Because this does raise an excellent question, too, of what's the point of watching sports, you know?
What?
Well,
get over there?
Well, this is why. It's if he literally signs a lifetime contract, that never happens. And teams, especially like the Indians, the fans don't get to root for the same players for more than 7 or 8 years because they hit a point where they cannot afford them anymore. Everyone from the 90s left because they couldn't afford them anymore. Some of them came back and then left again and signed somewhere else again for a year, and it was a little bit embarrassing because we gave them a statue.
Not to name any names, just somebody.
I'm just saying, theoretically. some, you know. Manny Ramirez left because they couldn't afford it. If they could actually keep, like, what I mean is, why do we watch the game? It's entertaining and is it because we like the team or because we like the players? Are we rooting for Laundrie or are we rooting for players? This is the thing Bill Simmons wrote about ages ago. And by having a player of Lindor's caliber and just everything, you suddenly have – I mean, would a Reds fan trade, you know, the last and future several years of Joey Votto for a world championship, or at least the chance for another run in 2011 or 12 or what have you? Maybe. I don't know. But that's what I mean when I say it's why do we watch sports? Is it just because we want to see championships? Because that seems a little gross and dumb because, I don't know, I don't think life is a zero-sum game. It seems a little weird to approach just sports that way, even though it literally is. But I'd like the Indians to win a World Series this year, but I think I'd like it more if I got to watch Francisco Lindor as an Indian forever, right? So
yeah.
In terms of do I want them to win a championship this year? Yes, I do. And that's gonna mean that only 3 more years of Lindor after his arbitration is up. Yeah, I guess that's a fair trade off. But I think I'd rather see Lindor.
And I feel like maybe
they're not like definitely not gonna win a World Series this year.
Yeah,
they're still in it. I don't know. They could still do it. They could just all the starters could get hot. So I don't know.
I feel like the front, like all front offices now, they have the same mindset as that. Is that it's not worth, not every year you don't have to win the World Series. It's better to build out and have more chances over more years. And maybe it's not because they want to watch Lindor for so many years, but they just want to have a more successful team over so long. So I think the years of like dumping everything you have into one player is probably gone. So if the Indians had this proposition come up, I'm almost positive they would take Lindor forever over dumping a bunch of stuff and also trimming how short they have Lindor just to get a reliever for this year. Cause I think more teams are realizing you don't have to be great to win a World Series. You just have to get in the postseason and be hot for a long time. And if you have Lindor for another 10 years, you're going to get in the postseason at least a couple more times.
Yeah. And again, like I said, it's not like it's over at the end of the year. They'll lose Brantley. That sucks, but maybe Will Benson will be really good.
Right.
He's been hitting, you know, he's been lights out. What's his name? The third baseman, Yu Chung Chang, or
Ching Chang, or Chiang. It's like Chiang Chang.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Sorry. Him. He's been hitting lights out too. So they develop hitters. Again, I said this when I was on that radio show on Thursday or Friday or whatever it was. The Indians minor leagues are full of great hitters. They're one of the best hitting minor league systems in all of baseball. And there's a reason for that. They can develop hitters. They can develop hitters and starting pitchers. You can't develop a reliever, and that sucks. But what can you do? And again, hey, maybe Brantley leaves, and maybe Yandy Diaz finally gets his shot and becomes great. Who knows?
I want to point out that sounded really bad a second ago. I got him mixed up with Xiao Ching Chang. I wasn't just yelling Ching Chang out loud.
That was terrible.
What is Indians? What it's like, you're right. It's like you.
What is his name? I'm checking their top 30 prospects now, just so we don't seem like insensitive piece of garbage. It is Yu Cheng Chang. It is.
It is. It's not just Chen Chang. Okay. Yeah.
Cheng Chang. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, Will Benson, Nolan Jones have been hitting all right from what I understand. These are guys, hell, Bobby Bradley could be something. Also, these are guys they could trade another time.
Yep.
And even if they lose some pitchers, again, Shane Bieber's there. Tristan McKenzie's on his way up. The pipeline is still there, and it's got some good players that I think some will develop into better players than we think. Because, again, the Indians have shown a demonstrated ability to create better players.
And let's not rule out Bradley Zimmer and Greg Allen yet, as they can potentially
be. Exactly.
Good. Yeah.
I still think Bradley Zimmer is going to be a star. Maybe not a super duper star like I had hoped originally. I mean, I firmly believe one of those three outfielders, him, Zimmer, or Frazier, is going to be great in the majors. And it's got to be one of them, I think. I assume, right? Otherwise, my entire theory here of them being able to develop players is utterly bust. So,
I think they have a pretty good. It's not just us being Indians fans looking at the farm being optimistic, I think. I think they have a pretty good. I mean, they have a good track record, too, of developing these players and having come up. So it's not completely out of the question to look forward to a bunch of these lower level of the minors players coming up and competing when they're in the majors.
So to answer your whoever's question, I think I'd rather just keep the Lindor and see what happens this year because, again, they're still in it. Like they still have one of the best starting rotations in baseball. And as big as bullpens are these days in the playoffs – starting pitching is good too.
Yep.
And they now have two Corey Kluvers, and that's pretty good. But two more Corey Kluvers than any team has ever had in the history of science. That's pretty good.
So let's finish this off with a good old MVP debate, because who doesn't love those? At S. Brady Artists, he asks, if Mike Trout passes 14 WAR and one of Jose Ramirez or Francisco Lindor passes 10 but still can't catch Trout, who wins the MVP? Does playoff positioning, divisional competition factor in? This is... So they're saying if Mike Trout...
No, I get it. No, I mean, by what is more? So if Mike Trout has literally the best season in history, but then the Indians make the playoffs, no, of course they're going to give it to Mike Trout. That's...
Yeah. So what if we tone it back a little bit? Like, what if Trout just gets a 10 and Lindor is, like, just as usual, like 7-8 somewhere in there? So it's not historically great, but...
All right, so what do those numbers look like then? Because assuming that happens, and then Mike Trout's going to put up another one of his MVP candidate winning seasons. His, let's call it his 2016, when he was 24 years old, and he hit 29 home runs, 30 stolen bases. He hit 315 with a 441 on-base percentage and a 173 OPS plus. What does that look like for Lindor? Just continuing what he's doing this year and extrapolated out to the full season?
It's pretty close, yeah.
Because I don't know, at that point, then we're talking something. Then we're talking about a short hitting 45 home runs. Then we're talking about, because he's got, 12? All right, so if he hits 36 home runs and has a 900 OPS and is a shortstop, I think it's much closer than we actually think. Because, again, a shortstop's not supposed to do that. And MVP voting does all depend on who's voting that year, which is really stupid. I found that out when listening to Effectively Wild last year. But depending on who's voting, it may go one way or the other. Like, that's why Felix Hernandez won it one year, but then sometimes, you know, it'll be much more traditional looking, I guess. Yeah. So yeah, I think that if that would have to happen, if Trout merely recreates one of his legendary seasons instead of being truly earth-shattering, that's what it would need. But I don't know. At this point, he's already at 5 wins above replacement. Come on.
And it's, I mean, we're just making up debates because unless it's really close, it should be Mike Trout no matter what the playoff situation is. Yeah. Unless they're super close, or like you said, Lindor is that good as a shortstop. But these debates are always so super fit. It's just because people want a reason to argue MVP. Just vote for Mike Trout. Like, last year was kind of up in the air because he was injured for so long. But even then, he was like one of the best players, but not the best player.
Yeah, I think he was third. He's fourth in MVP voting. And he only played 114 games.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think he's probably better than Jose Ramirez.
Mike Trout? Yeah, I think so. Oh, last year, you mean? Yeah.
Last year, yeah. He was. I mean, he had 6.7 wins above replacement. Ramirez was 6.9. So, I don't know, man. That's a close shave right there. I think I'd probably take the center fielder over the third baseman at that point. And plus, Ramirez, he'd get a boost by playing some second base there as well, I think, in terms of the D-WAR.
Yeah.
Oh, he was so good last year. Trout, I mean. Ooh, baby.
He's so good every year. It's like so many.
God damn, he's so good.
Let's just make a Mike Trout podcast someday.
Oh, you mean a baseball podcast?
Yeah, there you go.
Because they're all that?
The Game Mike Trout Plays podcast. That's what we'll call it.
Lord, he's so boring, but he's so good.
I know. It's just, I don't.
He's everything. He's a curse. He's everything Rob Manfred doesn't want in his greatest player.
He had a 5-hit game, and like people forgot about it within an hour.
Oh, God damn. Yeah, my dad was texting me about it. I was like, Jesus Christ, this guy's amazing. And in, you know, and in New York, of all places, like just.
Yeah.
Ugh, I can't even do that in a video game. You know, people say video game numbers, and he's just doing things that I can't do in video games sometimes. Well, almost. At this point, I'm hitting a home run every game, so whatever.
All right, Matt. That's going to do it for this week.
Another victory.
Another, what is it, bullpen blown victory, Greg Allen walk-off that Merritt missed. But we did it.
Well, Matt.
Talk to you next week, Merritt.
All right. Have fun. See you. You